Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? It's Lean Keys Real Talk. Back with another episode. Big show tonight. It's UFC 259 this weekend. We're going to get right to it, not wasting any time, because there's a lot to break down, a lot of predictions going to be made, and a lot of back and forth probably going to be had. So we'll get right to it. But what's up? Yeah, what's up, y'all? How you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. Amped up about this show. Amped up about this this card this weekend. It should be a good one, bro.
Evan?
Very excited to be here. Cannot wait to break down, you know, everything we got to break down. And then, you know, second half, break down the card. Very excited. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, all right,
so my first order of business is this. I want to ask you this real quick. So, Lee, your boy Andy Ruiz Jr., he showed off some pitches. And he looks like he's lost a lot of weight, man. He looks really good. He's really done a 180 with his whole physique. And I thought I read somewhere that somebody said it's since he joined Team Canelo, he looks entirely different. So what's your take on that?
I think the way that he won the belt against Joshua was he looked good in the ring. But then when he came back for the rematch, you could just tell that he just wasn't the same guy. And I attribute that to his training. But, you know, it's good that he's taking it seriously. But what's the chance of him really getting a title shot within the next year, year and a half? Because I read somewhere where Fury and Joshua are on the verge to sign a 2-fight deal. And then, you know, Wilder is out there still. So maybe they might have to go find one of them, trash belts to claim the part of the championship. But I just don't see Ruiz being in title picture no time soon unless he takes a fight against Wilder. Get Wilder versus Ruiz Jr., man, and see what happens. But I'm proud that he's taking it seriously, though. But he should have took it seriously going into the second fight.
Yeah, I remember seeing pictures. He was kind of partying a lot after he won the belt.
Yep.
And you didn't really see too much of him locking in for that second fight. He didn't really seem like he was too focused on the fight itself. I think he seemed like he got really caught up in the people that, you know, were around him since he became a champion. It seemed like, you know, there was a lot of celebrating, and it became, you know, I think he got kind of caught up in that commotion of being a champion.
Yeah, no doubt.
But another thing that I wanted to bring up, you know, non-boxing related, I know that that's another thing we can go into probably on next week's show. We'll talk about that because I know I'll at least have to ask you about that, and we'll talk about that because I know the Fury and Joshua fight is getting closer from what I've been reading, that they're getting, you know, the contracts in order for that. It seems like things are moving for that fight. So we'll be talking about that probably on next week's show or in the near future for sure. But there's actually a couple things. I mean, but one is, so Dominic Cruz is fighting in the main event on the prelims on UFC 259.
Yep.
Now, I watched his interview. He did a Zoom interview with ESPN, you know, Ariel Helwani. He did a Zoom interview a couple of days ago. And I think I watched the entire thing. Now, I just enjoy listening to Dominic Cruz talk. I like the way he talks. I like his mentality, and I like to listen to – I like his commentary, and I like his interviews. And so I watched the whole interview, and he brought up Keith Peterson. And, you know, if we look back when he fought Henry Cejudo not that long ago, and he lost by TKO, after the fight, Dominic Cruz was saying that Keith Peterson It almost seemed like he was blaming, like, it was almost like he was calling it a bad stoppage, and at the same time was saying that the reffing was suspect. He kind of, like, called out Keith Peterson for his, you know, his mental state during the fight and saying that he didn't seem all there. He said Keith Peterson smelled like alcohol and cigarettes, you know, backstage before the fight, and he didn't really trust. It seemed like he was saying, I don't really trust Keith Peterson's judgment, or I didn't trust his judgment as a referee for my fight that night. And that sounded really, you know, that kind of sounded, that's a big claim to make, you know, and at the same time, it kind of sounds like a little sore loserish. If you ask me, you know, it kind of sounds like, I mean, fighters, you know, they make a lot of excuses, you know, for things. I mean, you even have Paulo Costa this week who's talking about how he was drinking too much wine the night before he fought Adesanya, and that's why he lost. But, I mean, that's a whole other thing that we won't go into. But I'm just saying fighters do, you know, come up with a lot of things, you know, when they lose a fight as to what influenced them to lose the fight. So, you know, Cruz called out Keith Peterson, and then he brought it back up when he interviewed with ESPN. A couple of days ago, he brought that topic back. I don't know if Ariel Helwani asked him about that or if he just brought – I want to say he was asked about it first. He was asked about, you know, that allegation and that, you know, that whole situation with that fight. And then, you know, I think – I want to say Ariel Helwani kind of, like, brought it back home to this fight and then kind of asked him about it. And Cruz doubled down on his claims. You know, it wasn't, like, so heavy on, like – you know, he wasn't so heavy on saying it was, you know, he kind of said it was a bad stoppage still, but that didn't seem to be his focus. You know, he seemed more focused on on Keith Peterson, like the way he seemed backstage before the fight. He seemed to hone in on that, saying that, and it actually made me laugh out loud. Y'all got to go watch that interview. If you haven't watched it, y'all got to go watch that after this. You got to go watch it because I laughed out loud. When Cruz was explaining his interactions with Keith Peterson backstage before the fight, man, it made me laugh out loud. He said that he was looking at Keith Peterson and like almost like waving his hand in front of him to see if he was here. He was like, "Are you here?" He was like, "I was talking to him and I couldn't tell if he was really looking at me or not." He was like, "I couldn't tell if he was really there with me. You know, when we were talking backstage, he seemed kind of out of it." But it was just really funny. And I guess what I'm bringing it back to is, I don't know if either one of you guys watched that interview, but what do you think about that? And, you know, Dominic Cruz requesting that Keith Peterson is not the referee of his fight with Casey Kenney on Saturday night.
Go ahead, Evan.
I understand it, and I did actually watch the interview. Oh, I don't know which one specifically it was, but it was the media live stream for MMA Junkie. It just had everyone, and I was just watching the whole live stream. And that I forget who brought it up, but he talked to the commission, and he requested that I do not want him to ref my fight. And he explained something to me that I did not know prior to the fight, was that he had an issue with him, you know, in the back room before the fight, so that was brand new to me. And so I'm fine with it. I understand completely. You see,
hold on, Evan, stop. A lot of feedback, bro. A lot of feedback. Can you cut that off? Somebody's mic is like a lot of feedback. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
hello,
you, but
hello.
That, like, everybody can hear that.
Sorry, is it better now?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay. We good?
Yeah, it's good.
All right, let's go.
What's it called? I'm fine with it. You know, no issue to me. You know, if, like I said, the fans are always, you know, iffy with certain refs, like, some people don't like Herb Dean because he stops fight too early or he lets them go too far. You know, fans ridiculed Mario Yamasaki for, you know, his last reffing thing. And now I think he's trying to get back into reffing, but who knows who will actually ever let him ref. But, no, I'm cool with it. No worries.
Okay. I'm kind of with Keys on this one, man. It's just, it's laughable, man. It's like, if you really watch that fight, he was hurt. He was taking shots. He started to gather himself once the ref pulled Triple C off of him. That's when he started to gather himself. He wasn't gathering himself when he was getting hit. So I think it's kind of laughable. But at the same time, we never heard anything that came out and said that he was lying about the state of the referee. The UFC didn't come out and adamant and say Dominique Cruz was wrong. So maybe there might be some truth behind that. But I just look at it as an excuse that he lost the fight.
Yeah, I mean, it could very well be an excuse. I mean, it just made me laugh. Like, because when you said that they were talking backstage, that was the part that I was more listening to. The fight itself and the stoppage, you know, it's controversial. I could see why people would say that it was an early stoppage, but I could see why people would say that it was a fair stoppage. So, I mean, that itself is not really too much in question for me. It was what it was. I don't really think Cruz should have just jumped in and, like, took a fight with you know, I don't think he should have just jumped in and took that fight in the first place. You know, I think that, I mean, I don't think I had that opinion at that time because it was just too exciting to see him get in there again. But it was, like, really, like, a five-year layoff. Like, I don't think that was a good fight to take, you know, for your return. But as far as, like, the backstage stuff, I mean, if nobody's coming out and denying it, like you said, no one's coming out and responding to it at all or saying that, you know, he's shooting it down and saying this is what happened, or you don't see anything from Keith Peterson, I mean, I believe him. You know, I don't think Dominic Cruz, like, with as big of a name as he has, would, like, put something out there that like that could, like, could kind of tarnish his reputation, because he has his hands dipped into a lot of, like, you know, a lot of facets with the UFC. And I really don't think that Cruz is that kind of guy that's just going to come out and say something like that if he didn't mean it. And if there wasn't a lot of legitimacy to it, I don't think Cruz would say that, you know, because even in the same interview, he was like, I admitted that I lost the Cody fight. He was like, I felt like I won two rounds and Cody won three rounds. He was like, I came out and admitted that, you know, and I admit that still. I'm okay with that. But my whole point, so my whole thing is that,
really, he really came out and said he lost the Cody fight. We know you lost the Cody fight. That he didn't even have to admit that. We know that. That's just lame. Go ahead, Keys. Finish up, man. That's lame.
Yeah, so anyways, to close that out, is that I don't think he would make that story up and then bring it back, you know, almost a year later and, like, kind of double down on that whole situation if there wasn't, you know, some legitimacy to it. So I believe him, and, you know, I think the UFC should listen to that and not, you know, have somebody else ref his fight, because if there's any kind of, like, situation, like, you know, the same ref that stopped the Kevin Lee and Chiesa fight, you know, how would they feel if whoever that, I don't remember who that ref was, but if you put that ref, and I think Chiesa said that was an early stoppage. If Chiesa came out and said that he didn't want that ref to ref his fights anymore, which I wouldn't doubt that he said that somewhere, and then they came back then, you know, the next fight and put the same ref on Chiesa's next fight, I mean, I feel like that's ethically wrong, and even from a business standpoint, it is wrong to do to a fighter. So, yeah, I hope they get somebody else for him.
So let me ask a quick question. Do y'all feel like it was an early stoppage in the Cejudo fight, or was it a good stoppage?
I'll go. I believe when you look at it, I think it was a fine stoppage. I think the biggest problem that everyone, including Cruz, is having, that it was so close to the fence and that Cruz was getting up. Like, he took a lot of unanswered shots, and then by the time he got to the fence, I can see why the stoppage happened. But just all the drama, you know, it clogs the mind, and it makes you blind to just a simple fact. He got dropped by a clean knee, and he was wobbled. He took a lot of unanswered shots, and by the time he was up to defend himself, you know, it just was a little too late. So at the end of the day, you know, I don't think it was an early stoppage. I think if that was me, I would have rather take the L instead of taking more damage, because sometimes they let these guys just get destroyed. And,
yeah,
you know, it takes time. It takes, you know, fights out of their career, money out of their pockets because of all the damage. And now I got to go to the hospital because you let me get my brain beaten. So, no, I would say not no to an early stoppage.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say it was probably a fair stoppage more than not. I mean, I was definitely upset by it when I did see it. If I watch it back, I'd probably still be upset by it. I don't love the stoppage. Like, I don't think it was a great stoppage, but I'd say it was more of a fair stoppage than it was a bad stoppage. You know, there's some refs where it's like, okay, that timing was perfect because he was really out. Do I think that Cruz was really out? No, I don't. I mean, I think you can see that. It's very obvious that he was not. But at the same time, like I said, there's some fights where dudes are really out. Like, if you go back and look at the Ngannou and Rosenstruck fight, when Ngannou hit him with the first shot that made his back hit the cage, it should have been stopped
gone.
Instantly.
Yep.
Yeah, it should have been stopped instantly. He was – the way his neck, like, kind of sat – he kind of, like, almost – his body, like – He almost sat up against the cage, and then Ngannou landed, like, I want to say 3 or 4 more shots before the ref stopped it. Like, that, I think, was a bad stoppage. And I think a great stoppage is the second you see a guy is really out, you stop it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But,
yeah.
You know, I understand guys, them saying, oh, this guy wasn't showing any defense, and, you know, how am I supposed to know? Like, that kind of stoppage, while controversial, it makes sense. And I think that's more or less what the Cejudo and Cruz stoppage was. It was, he wasn't out. I don't think he was out, but I think he, since he didn't immediately show defense and he wasn't like trying to change position or you know, get off the cage, like I can understand why the ref instinct would be, okay, I should stop this, you know, because the way it looked, I could definitely see that.
I agree with you, Keys. It might not have been the best stoppage, but it was a good stoppage. I agree with Evan. He took a lot of unanswered shots, and he wasn't looking to get up until the ref pulled Cejudo off. But hey, I thought it was a good stoppage. Let's keep on pushing on, Keys. Let's go, baby.
So, another thing that we heard tonight is the UFC just released Junior Dos Santos and Alistair Overeem. I mean, I'll just come out now and say, I feel like Alistair Overeem, while it's kind of sad to see them go, because those are guys that, you know, that brought a lot of people into the sport. Alistair Overeem, a lot of guys were watching him, you know, watching both of those guys since like the early days, the Pride days, and you know, they've had long careers, and so it's kind of bittersweet, you know, for me, because Overeem's had, I think, like over 60 fights. I mean, not all in the octagon, but he's had over 60 like pro fights. Junior Dos Santos, I'm pretty sure, has had like upwards of like 40 pro fights, I want to say, maybe even 50, upwards of 50. And, you know, so I'm okay with seeing them walk away. But at the same time, I mean, I think like Overeem probably, I think he was done anyways. You know, I'm not saying that he didn't have anything more. I just think that you know, when he kept saying, like, one last run at the title, I think he meant that. You know, that was literal for him. And I think he was going to fight until he lost. You know, I think that was his mentality. You know, I wouldn't doubt that that conversation, you know, he probably had that conversation with his team. And he was like, you know, we're going to keep going. We're on a, we're going to make one more run at the title. And it's like, you know, until we lose. And then once I lose, like, that's probably it. And especially with the way he lost, you know, in that fashion in his last fight, I think that was more than enough for him to say, okay, I think this is a good time for me to walk away. And, you know, as for Dos Santos, I mean, he was, you know, we were kind of just saying that I wasn't really saying it. I was acknowledging that he was doing well, but a lot of people were calling JDS like a title contender like a little over a year ago. So that part of it is kind of interesting to me, that the timing on him being cut is kind of probably more interesting to me than Alistair Overeem. But either way, I mean, I don't want to see JDS getting, you know, taking more punches. I mean, he's probably absorbed thousands and thousands of punches, you know, and he's been in a lot of wars. You know, I don't really want to see him getting KO'd anymore. So, you know, while the timing, I think, is kind of weird for JDS, I understand it. You know, I understand that the two of them getting cut slash, you know, being okay with, like, walking away. Hopefully they don't go to another promotion. I don't want to see them. If they're going to leave, I don't want to see them go and fight again.
Yeah, I totally agree with the JDS part. I think he had a good career. He's been in a lot of wars. You know, I think sometimes you just need to know when it's time. But I don't really know about how I feel about Overeem, man, because they was just kind of like hyping him up for this title run. And then, you know, heavyweight, you know, sometimes, you know, you get caught and it's over. But I thought he was doing pretty good in this recent run that he had when he switched up camps. So I was kind of shocked by Overeem, but not by JDS.
If I may, I found a ESPN article by Ariel Helwani, and they don't say anything about Overeem. He has yet to comment, but according to sources close to Dos Santos, he was recently offered a short-notice fight against Marcin Tybura at UFC 260 on March 29th. Dos Santos declined due to not having enough time to prepare, since that's, you know, the end of this month. And apparently that was what ultimately led to the release. And what is a big thing here, I don't know if you mentioned it, Keys, I apologize if I missed it, but Overeem had two fights left on his contract, but Junior had five. So that's a lot of fights left, but I understand why. I'm with Keys 100%. I did not want to see JDS fight ever again. You were knocked out. We said in the group chat, he's been knocked out in his last 3-4 fights. I don't want to see it. Same with Overeem. They're taking unnecessary damage. It comes to a point where, do you want to, you know, you look at BJ Penn, legend, one of the greatest of all time, and look at him now. It's sad to see because he wouldn't stop. And I don't want that to happen to guys like Overeem or JDS. So I'm glad that they were let go by the UFC. Not that they, you know, they're out of a job, but I just don't see them finding any positivity within going to a different promotion, especially with most promotions outside of the UFC. Most guys are juicing to the gills and have no drug testing. But then again, we could see the return of Overeem, so who knows? Just my thoughts.
Okay, so sorry for that. I wanted to make sure I could pull up these fights for UFC 259. I figure now we can jump into...
Can I add something real quick before we go on to the next topic?
Yeah, add something real quick.
All right, real quick. This is a sign of the times in the UFC, especially in this division. They are ushering out all the old guys, and they are ushering in all the young guys. If you see, they're getting rid of all the old guard. I think Arlovski is going to be next. Cain Velasquez is gone. DC is gone. JDS is gone. Now Overeem is gone. They are going towards young heavyweights. And that I like the investment in the young guys. But, hey, sometimes you got to show the older guys the door, man. You got to show for them out the door. And I think that's what the UFC is doing in the heavyweight division.
I agree. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, you've been talking about new blood for years. I think you manifested it. You manifested it at this point. The new blood.
That was our thing for 2019.
It was. And I think it was manifested. The UFC is now investing into the young, the new blood concept. And they are putting millions into the new blood. And I think that's a good thing. There's a big silver lining to that, I think. You know?
Yeah.
Look at my boy Cyril Gane. Look at Cyril Gane. I was just writing articles about Cyril Gane. I know I love bringing this up, but you know I love bringing this up. I was just
that
writing
was
articles 2019. About Cyril Gane. Yeah, it was this time about 2 years ago. I just wrote about Cyril Gane, and this was when he right around the time he first got signed to the UFC. He hadn't even had his first fight yet. He was still 3-0 as a pro at this time. Now he's 7-0, I think, or 8-0. And I think he's ranked number 5. He's in the top 5 at heavyweight now. So, I mean, but he was one of those guys that it was new blood, and you had to, I mean, when he fought, not his fight he just did, but the one before that, I want to say he might have fought either Junior Dos Santos or one of these veteran guys, and he looked really good, and I think that was the passing of the guard. You know, that was one of those fights, you know, and I think he's, you know, a part of that bigger picture. The new blood is coming in.
Yep, totally agree.
And I think now is probably a good time. We can, you know, I was looking at this card. There's some fights on here definitely to talk about, but I want to be able to get to everything. So,
yep.
I'll just ask you guys this. For the Dominic Cruz fight, we'll start with Dominic Cruz. Dominic Cruz and Casey Kenney. Evan, it's on you.
Okay. So I actually I love watching interviews. Lee, I don't know if you watch interviews, but honestly, they're so much fun to listen to. Like when they just do the cool media days. It's just cool to get an insight in what they, you know, how they feel about the fight leading up to it. Both sounded very confident. You know, Casey Kenney just seems like a chill dude who just loves to fight, and he's obviously a killer who interests me that he used to fight at 125. I honestly totally didn't know that, but he fills out very well at 135, and this is a mega opportunity for him. But, you know, you look at, I think Lee mentioned it in, no, not Lee, I apologize, Lee, if someone else on a Twitter group, Twitter thing I was having, they talked about, a lot of people were saying how Cruz was washed because, you know, he lost to Cody, who Cody had the best performance of his life, and look at him now, and then, you know, took 3.5 years off and went and fought an active Cejudo and got finished, early stoppage or not, we'll get into all that again, but I don't think Cruz is washed. I believe to some extent there has to be not necessarily ring rust, but I don't believe you can go. We saw Conor like once, you know, once every year and a half, 2 years, 3.5 years pertaining to Cruz and expect, you know, a solid performance. You know, I think the Cruz fight was just high risk. The Cejudo fight was high risk, high reward for Cruz. And it did not pan out. And now he's back down on the prelims, which I don't think that's a knock on anyone. I think that's honestly better for us. We get to see Cruz before the night gets too late. But as my prediction goes, as I just gave Cruz a bunch of credit, I'm still going to go with Casey Kenney. I got you on that one. I think Case Kenny's just, you know, younger. He's the prospect coming up. He's got some solid wins under his belt. And I just, like you said, Lee, they're getting rid of the old and, you know, bringing in the new. And I'm sorry, but Cruz is one of the old dogs of bantamweight. So let's see if it's time to go, or let's see if he's got another title run in him. We'll see. But I'm going to go with Casey Kenny by decision.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go Dominique Cruz by decision. Although he's been out the ring since last year about this time. He fought, last May 2020? So it ain't been a year yet. I think he does stay active in the game as far as, like, doing those breakdowns as far as, like, in the cage. It used to be him and Gilbert Melendez. They used to do it. So I still think he's kind of stays close in the gym and stuff like that. I'm going to take Dominique Cruz by split decision. I think Casey is going to be a stern test for him. I like Kenny. Both of them have good takedown accuracy. So this fight might not be a stand-up fight, although when they show highlights of Dominique Cruz, it's always his footwork and his head work. I think Kenny will have to figure that out in the first round, being this a three-round fight. He's going to have to figure Dominique out early. If he don't, he might be in for a long night. But I'm going to go with Dominique Cruz by split decision, man.
So, for the tiebreaker, this one didn't take too much thought for me. I mean, I had the same pick all week, and I just had to reassure myself looking through the tail of the tape. And for the record, Casey Kenny is another guy that I used to write about, and I wrote about him when he first got signed. For the record, another guy. So just to put that out there, we're definitely a fan of Casey Kenny over here. But at the same time, when you really look at it, obviously Cruz didn't look good in his last one. Casey Kenny did look good in his last one. I want to say Kenny's on a three-fight win streak right now as well. So he's definitely been having a good run as far as that. Cruz, one fight in the last 5 years. But like you said, I feel like Cruz is a guy who's sparring all the time, and he's always around the culture, and he's watching fights, analyzing fights. I feel like his mind never leaves the game, even when his body does. So I feel like he never really takes time off, as far as that. I think one thing here that is going to be the difference maker is when you look at it, I mean, their stats kind of line up as far as decisions. I mean, both of these guys have most of their fights. I mean, 64% of Cruz's fights go to decision, 56% of Kenny's fights go to decision. So, I mean, if you just go off that, like it could very likely be, a three-round fight. And, I think the difference maker with that is, percentage of significant strikes landed, Kenny 52% to Cruz is 32%. But at the same time, Cruz more strikes landed per minute, and Kenny more strikes, more than double the strikes. Kenny has more than double the strikes absorbed per minute. So I think that is a huge thing as well. Also, Cruz beats him in the defense 73% to 56%. And also, if you're looking at the resume, I mean, there's absolutely nobody on earth that can convince me that Casey Kenny's resume is anywhere close to Cruz's resume. I mean, this guy's been fighting basically title contenders, almost his entire career. If you look at Cruz, like his last 10 fights, I mean, he's fighting pretty much all either former champions or current champions. And, he's always going for the biggest fish. And Kenny's still new to the U.S. I mean, Kenny has like 3 or 4, maybe 5 fights. He's not super new, but, I mean, compared to Cruz, I don't think he's fought the same level of competition. And if his strikes absorbed is more than double Cruz, considering that, I think he will have a hard time with Cruz. I think Cruz, with, the much better footwork, I think is going to have Kenny in for a huge challenge in this fight in the striking department. And I think Cruz will have a really impressive performance and will win by unanimous decision, probably 30-27 on the scorecard.
All right.
So next one of the night is the first fight on the main card. Let me switch over. Okay, first fight of the main card, you have the return. Wow, this is a fun fight. Oh, my goodness. The return of Thiago Santos. Your boy, Thiago Santos, coming back after, like, I want to say almost 2 years away. His last fight was the one against Jones. And he's fighting this Alexander Rakic, who's been pretty impressive in the light heavyweight division, you know, from what we've seen of him lately. And Rakic is also the betting favorite going into this fight. So whichever one of you wants to go first. Evan, if you want to go first again, feel free.
I'll go first.
However you all want to go about it.
You will go first.
I'll go first. This is easy for me. I love Thiago Santos. He got dominated by Glover Teixeira in his last fight. But I'm going with Alexander Rakic, man. Everything I've seen about this guy since he's joined the UFC, I like. Nice build at 205. Definitely a good striker. He doesn't back up. He's always coming forward. That might play into him getting leg kicked by Thiago Santos. But I'm going with Rockets, man. I think Rockets finishes Santos probably late in the second round, early third round. I'm going Rockets, man, by knockout. Easy for me.
All right, I'll go next. Evan, get the tiebreaker.
Go for it.
I'll go next. So I didn't know that Thiago Santos already returned. I thought this was his first fight since Jones. So that was news to me. I didn't even know that he fought Glover this year. I couldn't even tell you when that was. So I really haven't – my recent memory of him is from a couple years ago. Rakic is showing that he has a lot of power. He's fast. The Thiago Santos is a similar guy. I feel like this is a very these two guys, this is a good matchup. I feel like this is really good matchmaking from the UFC. I think I'm going to go with Santos. I'm going to be different. I'm going to go with Santos. I'm going to say – because I don't really know, I don't have a good picture of either one of these guys and then their recent fights, so I'm going to just go with that familiarity. I'm going to go with Santos, second round. Actually, no. Santos, third round. I'll say third round, TKO.
Okay. Tiebreaker, Evan.
All right. This was a tough one for me because I've been a fan of Thiago Santos for a while. You know, he's been in the UFC for a very long time. And I'm now realizing, you know, no disrespect to him, but he is not a spring chicken anymore. You know, he's 37 years old. Not saying that's old, but in the fight game, it's considered, you know, a little bit older. But, you know, what can we say? We've talked about the last few fights. You know, he came back against Glover. He looked heavy, didn't look right. I mean, he was dropping Glover, but Glover, for whatever reason, won't stay down and just always comes back. And then the last one was against John Jones. But I don't know. I like Santos. I like his style. He's always fun to watch. You know, he always comes to fight. He's not interested in, you know, wrestling or any of that stuff. No disrespect to the wrestlers. But when it comes to this fight, you know, I'm going to go Santos. I'm going to stay biased. I'm going to take Santos by, I'm going to say first round knockout. Just, we're going to go crazy with Santos. Screw it.
Okay.
Evan predicts a one hit acquitter. Evan predicts Santos by one hit acquitter. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Rolling into the next fight. You have Islam Is it Machaev? Looks like Machaev.
Islam Makhachev.
Islam Machaev? Makhachev?
Makhachev.
Islam Makhachev? Okay, so Islam Makhachev versus Drew Dober. This is another fight where I feel like this is great matchmaking. I feel like this is the type of matchmaking that we have called for a long time now, and we are starting to get it. You have the number 14 ranked versus the number 15 ranked, and this is a lightweight fight. I feel like people forget that these are also lightweights. So we are getting to see the lightweights more now. And this, that's another thing that I've been wanting to see, more top 15 lightweights fighting each other, because a lot of these guys don't want to fight each other. It's just like welterweight. Nobody wants to fight anybody. So it's good to see that. Two of these guys, this is another one where, I mean, I watched Machaev. I already forget how you pronounce his name. Did Islam fight RDA? I want to say Islam fought.
No, he was supposed to. He was supposed to fight RDA, but then he had to pull out. So that's when RDA fought Paul Felder.
So I watched Islam versus somebody on YouTube recently. I haven't seen Drew Dober. I don't remember. Drew Dober, another guy that I've wrote a lot about, but I can't recall his most recent fight. But I did watch Islam on YouTube recently, and one thing that I was noticing about him is that when he takes you down, he has trouble keeping guys down. I don't know if that's a common thing, but it just seemed like he gets takedowns, but he has a hard time keeping guys down. It's not like Khabib where you take guys down, and it's like once he takes them down, they're not getting up. Like, I feel like Machaev kind of, guys get back up a lot when he takes them down. I mean, given 68% takedown accuracy, he lands 3.4 takedowns, you know, per 15 minutes, but an impeccable takedown defense. I mean, this dude ain't going down, and he can strike, so I feel like he's well-rounded, but I question his dominance, you know, on the mat once he takes you down. I know he can take you down, but how dominant is he in top position? You know, what can he, how much can he do with that? Is what I'm questioning about him. But even with that being said, still going with Islam to win the fight. I'm going to go with Islam. It's going to be an action-packed fight. I think this actually could be the fight of the night. I think this could be the fight of the night. Very well. Could be the fight of the night. And this is going to be a spark for the lightweight division. I think these two guys, it's going to go the distance, three rounds. I think Machaev wins it probably 30-28 on the cards.
This is real quick for me. I think the UFC is definitely trying to raise their stock up in Islam. That's why he's at this position of the card. So basically they're giving him a guy he's supposed to beat. Although everybody say Drew Dober is tough and all this good stuff. Islam wins this fight by second round submission. His pressure is going to be too much for Drew. Drew's going to have to keep trying to get to his feet. Going to make a mistake and get tapped out in the second round. Islam.
All right.
We know you're taking Islam. Make it short.
Honestly, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I this is truth. I have no idea who's going to win this fight. Because that's the thing. People think Islam is supposed to be the next Khabib. He's supposed to be, not Khabib 2.0 to say, but just he's supposed to follow in those footsteps and, you know, show great, you know, whatever you want to call it. But Drew Dober's a solid kid, and, you know, he's got a ton of experience, 23-9 record, He's on a three-fight win streak with all finishes. His last fight was against Alexander Hernandez, and he won in by KO fashion. So he's flying high with a lot of momentum to where Islam, who is on a win streak because he hasn't lost since the one loss on his record, which back in 2015 – but his last fight was in September of 2019, so he's been inactive for some time now. So that you know, you wonder how that plays a part. But like I said, in all honesty, I have no clue who's going to win this fight. I'm just going to pick who I would like to win this fight, and I would like to see Drew Dober win this fight. I think it would shock up the division. I personally don't care for Islam. I've seen his fights before, and I've never been really interested. So I'm taking Drew Dober by decision. We'll see what happens.
Hey. Okay.
Okay. So going into the triple title, the triple title headliner. It's about to get crazy. It's about to get very crazy in here. Oh my goodness. All right. So do you guys want to do the, what order y'all want to do the title fights in? Like which one do you want to do first? We don't got to go like the card
do
style
Nunez
up,
first.
You know, bottom.
All right.
You
want to
do
Nunez well.
And Megan Anderson?
Yeah.
Lee, you want
to
open up about Nunez? Because you sound like you want to talk about it.
Hey, man, this fight here, if Megan can establish herself by taking Nunez down, she has a chance. But if she can't take a punch, it's going to be over quick. As much as I like Megan Anderson, I think she's going to get really outclassed in this fight. I just think Amanda Nunez is heads above anybody at 135 and anybody at 145. She's been out for a while, though. But I'm going to take Nunez, man. Until somebody beats her, I'm going to pick her. I just don't think Megan can – I just don't think she can stand up to Nunez's power. But I think Nunez wins this fight. Probably, I'm going to say third round, TKO. I'm going with Nunez, man.
Okay, so that's another thing that I wanted to bring up about this. And, you know, I think Nunez is – first of all, I feel like this is – kind of just like another fight to try to revive, well, not even revive, to even establish the 145 division. And there's just no division. Like you go to the website and there's just not even a top 15. Like it's just terrible. There's not even, this is just like one of those fights though. I feel like it's just putting whoever's there just to try to give Nunez like competition because you're putting her at a different, you know, weight class. But she's so dominant at 135, it's like it's almost not interesting to have her fight those girls. So put her in this fight. I think Nunez wins this fight too. I mean, Anderson really – I don't think she's that good. You know, I think she's good, but I don't buy into her hype, you know, like the way people talk about her. I mean, they said that when she was coming in. They talked about her versus Cyborg and all this stuff. And it's just like, you know, what I end up seeing from her in the UFC, I mean – she has skills for sure. She's good, but I don't think she's good enough to beat Nunez. You know, I don't think she's a championship level fighter, in my opinion. From what I've seen, I haven't been, you know, overly impressed with her. And I think Nunez will. I think it'll take Nunez. You know, I think Nunez might take like the first two rounds because Anderson is kind of, she's long. And she's got height too. I want to say she's a bit taller. Yeah, she's a bit taller. Yes, yeah, so she's
6 foot.
2'3". Okay, so she's got 4 inches in height on Nunez and 3 inches in reach. And she also has 2 inches in leg reach. So I feel like she's a good amount longer pretty much everywhere than Nunez. So I think Nunez will take the first two rounds to try to figure that out and deal with that. And because, you know, when Megan, if you're standing there striking with her, I mean, she definitely has that reach advantage, you know, could have her, you know, land in some shots. But I think Nunez will take the first two rounds to weather that and figure that out. And probably round three, Nunez will finish the fight. She'll win by TKO stoppage. She'll overwhelm Anderson in the striking.
All right. It's my turn.
Uh-huh.
I thought a lot about this pick.
Oh my God, you're going with the upset. You're going with the upset.
This is the best pick of all time. I don't think you guys realize how perfect this pick is. But let me tell you something. I'm gonna come out with it straight, all right? I'm gonna come out with it straight. I wasn't there. Alright. As you guys mentioned before, that 145 has absolutely no talent in it. There's literally no one in it. Cyborg is out of the UFC. Felicia Spencer showed no challenge for Nunes. It was a 5-round domination. And to make matters worse, she gets dominated for 5 rounds, and then Nunes puts the belt on her, and it's like, here's this toy. Like, thanks, that felt great. She smacked Holly Holm at 135, so that makes – they're not going to go to 45. So that's it. Megan Anderson is the last one at 145. But with that being said, I'm going with the upset, as Lee already broke the news. Megan Anderson will knock Nunes out within the first 2 rounds. I do not care. I'm putting money on it, so I'm backing up, putting money where my mouth is. That's it.
First two rounds. Okay.
Okay, Evan. Hold up, man. Look, man. I'm going to have to fill you in on something real quick. Just because you bet money on somebody when we doing our predictions, that don't mean you have to predict that they're going to win just because you're going to bet on them. I just want to throw that out there.
Of course not. That's betting. Okay. It's gambling.
Wow, Megan Anderson, second-round knockout. Okay. Woo. Boy, I can't wait to see how these next two fights go.
If I may, I would prefer to do the Izzy fight and leave the Jan Sterling for last, because I think that one is
cool.
The true main event.
Cool.
Lee, who did
Let's
you,
do
Lee,
it.
What round did you say? Lee, what round did you say for Nunes? What was your pick? Did you give a round, or did you just say she was going to stop?
I think the third round. I said third round. TKO.
Okay. Oh, so we have the same pick.
It's the obvious pick.
Yeah, we both said third
bunch
round
of,
TKO.
Bunch
Lee.
Of
That's the first time we've ever had the same exact pick.
Whatever, Evan.
That's the first time. Nah, look, yo, me and Lee have been disagreeing on fights for like 4 years. That's the first time we've ever had the exact same pick, like precisely.
Hey, we got two more fights.
I'm going to jump into it right now, if I may.
Okay.
We got Izzy.
You said you wanted to
do the main event.
The main event first?
Yeah, no, I like this one.
Yeah, let's do it. I have more to say about Jan Sterling, so.
Perfect. Me too. Like I said, we got Jan Blachowicz defending his light heavyweight championship against the reigning defending middleweight champion of the world, Israel Style Bender Adesanya. This is an incredible fight. I understand why it's the main event, name recognition and all that, and it's the heaviest weight, so that's the model for UFC pay-per-views and championship fights. But this is a very intriguing fight. I'm giving it a lot of praise, but, like, I personally don't like the double champ thing. I think it's, like, defeated, like, the double champ status defeats the status of just being a champion at all, because if you win the belt, like, you work so hard to become a champion of your division, defend it a few times, and then you become a double champion, and then now it's like, well, sugar, now I got to go and be a double champion, and soon enough we're going to have to be triple champions just to get some respect around here. So I just hate the double champ thing. But regardless, back to the pick. If you guys have seen interviews, Israel Adesanya has talked about that he is not bulking up for this fight, and to not be surprised if he weighs 193 pounds in the cage on fight night. So that's a big deal for
some.
Some people think
about.
That's a little crazy.
Really? Okay. I didn't mean to answer.
No, go on.
I was just saying that's what I'm confused about, because I don't understand this. Like, He said he's going to weigh 193. Can we bring out the rule book? What is happening? Like, 193? Like, what? I thought you had to, if you're in title fight, I thought you had to have exact weight. Like, you couldn't even have 1 pound over. I thought you had to be 205.9 or
you
or
could come in under. You could come
really?
In under. Yeah. You
I didn't
come
know
in
there
under
was a range.
Because remember that when
what's the lowest
that
you can
when,
come in at? I never even heard of this.
There is no lowest. As long as you don't weigh more than 205.00, you are considered championship weight. Now,
I don't
remember,
understand. But doesn't that defeat the purpose of weight classes? Like, if a guy comes in at 130 and he's weighing in for a 145-pound fight, isn't that dangerous for him? Like, isn't he supposed to weigh in at 145?
Well,
I thought that's
me
what they say about being overweight. So, how does that not go the same way for being underweight? I don't get it.
Well, if you really look at it, I want to say that when John Jones fought DC the second time, DC weighed 205, and John Jones came in at 204 point something. So you can be under, but I think, well, go ahead, Evan. We'll weigh this in when we do our predictions. But go ahead, Evan.
My prediction. It's another one of those fights where it's kind of just like iffy. You know, it's like, you know, Jan Blachowicz, you know, another, you know, elder gentleman in the division, 37 years old, but has found his way to the championship belt due to the exit of John Jones at light heavyweight and with an incredible performance against Dominic Reyes. With that being said, he is going to be the bigger, most likely the stronger fighter. But with that being said, he's going to be the slower fighter when it comes to speed and, you know, people don't realize, and I think Drew Dober said this, that speed, power, punching power does not come from size. It comes from speed and accuracy. And that's why you saw Israel Adesanya finish Paulo Costa to where Romero and him went three rounds. Size does not mean anything when it comes to power and speed. So that being said, I'm going to go Israel Adesanya. I don't think he's going to finish Jan. I think we're probably going to go I'd say five rounds. I don't see a finish here for some reason. I just can't see it. But, five-round decision win for Israel Adesanya. But one thing I wanted to bring up real fast since we're talking about the weigh-in thing, I believe Dan Henderson, when he fought Daniel Cormier at 205, I believe he weighed in at, like, 203 or even, like, lower than that for
he was small.
So that's a thought. But carry on. Make your pick.
Man, I know 2 years ago, me and Keys were real heavy on Izzy. I think we had him as our fighter of the year 2 years ago and our newcomer of the year 2 years ago. But he has definitely been rubbing me the wrong way here lately. I think the humbleness is definitely gone, and the braggadociousness is definitely here. But my pick is easy again. I'm going to take the bigger guy. I'm going to take Jan in this fight, because every time people pick, they think Jan is supposed to lose, he wins. He doesn't get rattled and deterred from his game plan in a fight. And when he did do that, he lost to Thiago Santos. When he goes in there, he goes with his game plan and makes adjustments. I think he's going to make Izzy carry his weight. I think this is the fight where we're going to see whether or not Izzy can fight off his back. I like Jan in this fight being a true 205er. I think he won this fight. I'll say by a split decision. I'm going with Jan to win this fight and steal.
Okay, so, Evan, you had Adesanya by decision, and Lee had Blachowicz by decision?
Yep.
Okay. So this is my thing, right? So I thought about this fight a lot this week, but I feel like if you're a statistics man, and I think if you're history repeats itself, right? And if you're a statistics man, there is one statistic to talk about in this fight. Now, it is not the fact that Błachowicz always wins when he's the underdog. It's not that. It's the fact that, and nobody talked about this. I didn't see anybody talk about this all week on MMA Twitter. And I'm really surprised nobody brought this up. I don't think anybody realizes it. I don't think anybody has come to grips with this fact. Okay? So in the Conor McGregor era, right, in the new era, the 2016 or the last champion versus champion fight that happened before
the lighter count,
Alvarez versus McGregor, I believe, was the GSP versus BJ Penn fight. I'm pretty sure that was the last time they did that because they were both – because BJ Penn, I think, moved up to welterweight to challenge GSP, and I think GSP knocked him out. I'm pretty sure they were both they're champions in their respective divisions. I'm pretty sure that was the last champion versus champion fight, and then they didn't do one for a while, and then they brought the concept back with Alvarez and McGregor. Now, one thing that has remained constant in every single champion versus champion fight that we have seen in the new era, the smaller weight class always wins. If you look at every fight that has happened, a champion versus champion fight, the smaller champion won every fight. And if you look at the fight, how did they win? By knockout. Some reason, and I can't explain to you the science of why. I don't know. But the smaller man always wins and defeats the bigger champion. Now, you can't count Stipe and DC2 or Stipe and DC3 because those were not champion versus champion fights at that point. You were just having – both guys were a contender in the second – one guy was a contender in the second and third fights. So you don't count that. But the first DC and Stipe fight, the smaller champion knocked out the bigger champion. You look at the Alvarez-McGregor, smaller champion knocked out McGregor knocked out Alvarez. You look at the Nunes and Cyborg. Cyborg was the bigger champion. Nunes knocked out Cyborg. You look at the fourth example, which brings the smaller champion to a perfect 4-0 record in champion versus champion fights, is the most recent one I believe we saw, which was Cejudo and Dillashaw. And Cejudo was the smaller champion. And what happened? He KO'd Dillashaw early in the first round there and say that has no significance. Nobody has talked about this all week. And if they have, I missed it. But I think it's going to continue. Adesanya is going to KO Błachowicz, and he's going to make it look easy. He's barely even going to get hit in this fight. That's my prediction. It's going to be Adesanya. I don't know what round. I don't know what round, honestly. But I think he's going to – actually, you know, I'm going to say Adesanya in the first three rounds. He's going to KO Błachowicz. He's going to make it look easy and win two bouts. The smaller champions are going to improve to 5-0 to continue the theory.
Yeah, okay. I don't buy into that theory because if you look at some of those matchups, the smaller guy was a better fighter. Conor was a better fighter than Alvarez. Nunes was a better fighter than Cyborg. DC was a more experienced fighter than Stipe. So I really don't buy into that concept, but we'll see how it plays out.
I don't know so much about Nunes was a better fighter than Cyborg. I know she beat Cyborg badly, but I think Cyborg just played terrible into that game because Cyborg was fighting terrible competition up in Nunes, and she wasn't getting hurt, so she did exactly what she'd done before, and it was just go into the firefight and expect nothing to happen. But I hope – I know it'll never happen, but I do have hopes that they would rematch. They would have had the rematch, but I know it's never going to happen. Circumstances and everything. But, nope, I get it. Let's move on because the next title fight, the real main event, is up.
Let's roll.
Okay, so...
All right. I'll go last on this one.
You want to go last?
Yeah.
All right, Evan, you want to – I mean, I just finished – I just closed out the last one. You want me to go first or you want to go first?
Yeah, no, I go first. I go first.
Because he's picking y'all.
Shut your face. Not a chance, my friend. Not a chance. I'm going to keep it straight. I'm going Aljamain Sterling. I have been on Twitter for months. Whatever the word is. But since he beat Corey Sandhagen, even before that, I was hashtagging Funk got next, and it's Funk Master's turn. Like, there was no reason for him not to get the title shot. It's just been ridiculous that it's been this long for him to get his shot at the title. You know, ups and downs and whatnot, but this is his time. He's someone that has grown up in the UFC. This is his fight. Like, this is it. Like, finally getting the strap, finally getting the title shot. And I think he gets it done. I think this is going to be one of the best fights of all time. Petr Yan is an incredible fighter, and he's looked good against his opposition. But in all respect, his opposition has been against an unretired Uriah Faber, who posed basically no threat except for like one shot that wobbled Yan, but couldn't do anything of it, and then got finished in the third round. And then he took on Jose Aldo, to where he had some problems. And Jose Aldo has still looked good. You know, he was able to take out Chito Vera, who everyone thought was, you know, on a rise after beating Sugar Sean O'Malley. To where you look at Aljamain's record, and his last few fights have been against young top talent. Corey Sandhagen finished him in the first round, to where Corey just knocked out two of his last two opponents. Pedro Munhoz, who just beat Jimmy Rivera, and Cody Stamann, and then Brett Jones. But so he's looked incredible, and I cannot wait for this fight. I'm going to go with Aljamain Sterling, of course. My pick, my prediction in the round, honestly, I think it would be the craziest thing to see, but I think Aljamain Sterling is going to hurt him on the feet because of his funky style. He sets up his punches with kicks, which is interesting. I don't know if a lot of people do that. But if you watch in fights, he throws a kick and then he brings it down as he's coming down. He launches a strike at you. And I think he hurts Yan. I think he takes him down, and I think he puts him to sleep. I don't think Yan will tap, but I think he'll get a submission. And we're going to see Nnu when it comes to Aljamain Sterling. So I can't wait. This is an incredible, incredible title fight. Cannot wait.
You set me up on that. I just knew you was going to go with Yan.
Okay. Lee, you said you want to go last for this one?
Yes, sir. I'll go last.
Okay. So, I'm just looking at it. You know, 5 point. Okay, Yan, 5.6 landed per minute. Sterling, 4.8 landed per minute. Sterling with the edge in significant strikes, 50-46%. Okay. So Yan absorbs a good amount more strikes because they've been at the same time. So, okay, this fight is pretty close. I mean, just looking at it overall, I would say the one big difference of it is Yan's takedown defense is significantly higher than Sterling. At the same time, I would argue that they really haven't been putting Yan against guys who are even going to try to wrestle him. I mean, as of recently, we really haven't seen him against guys that are big wrestlers, you know, and he's mainly had fights where he's able to just stand and strike, and that seems to be what he's comfortable with, so that's fine. But, saying the takedown defense, 87%, I mean, we really haven't seen him, somebody who's going to continuously shoot on him. Like I haven't seen it. And I remember his early fights. I don't remember seeing it. If maybe it has happened, I just don't remember. But either way, I do think Sterling is the more versatile fighter. I think he's more well-rounded. I think Sterling will welcome the striking that Yan's going to want to have that kind of fight. I think I think Sterling is going to be ready for that kind of fight. I mean, we've seen Sterling stand in there with somebody and have that kind of fight when he fought Jimmy Rivera. He stood in between using the clinch and standing in and striking with Rivera. Now, that was mostly what that fight was. But I think overall Sterling is a very well-rounded guy. And Jan, I just don't think, has as many ways to win this fight. I think that in the end of it, you know, I think we'll see a good fight. But I think, you know, Sterling is, he said it too. He said, I'm going to, you know, I could shoot 999 times. He could stuff 900. We said something like that. You know, I could shoot 99 times. He could stuff 99 takedowns. But once I land number 100, I'm going to get him out of there. And, you know, I think that's what we're going to see here. I think the Jan's going to be confident in the striking, but Sterling's going to be ready for that. He's going to welcome it. They're going to strike for a little while. Eventually, he's going to shoot when Jan's not expecting it. Jan will get back to his feet. I think he'll take him down over and over again. You'll probably see 3, 4, maybe 5, possibly 6 takedowns from Sterling in this fight. And I think it's going to become too much for Jan. Sterling's going to get the tap. I think Sterling submits Jan probably, I'll say, in round 4. I say Sterling. Yep, Sterling round 4 submission to win the bantamweight championship.
All right. Man, it's scary because the last time all three of us picked somebody to win, they lost. So I hope this isn't a replay of that, because I want my man Aljamain Sterling to win the belt. I think when he beat Jimmy Rivera back in 2019, I thought he deserved a title shot. Then they put him against Pedro Munhoz. He beat him. They told him nah. Then he fights Corey Sandhagen, beats him. Then they give him a title shot. Aljamain Sterling has definitely put in the work to get in the position that he's in today. And I think that hard work doesn't go unwarranted. I think he wins this fight. I think Peter Yan's competition hasn't been the greatest, whereas Aljamain Sterling has. He's fought anybody and everybody basically at 135. He's fought Sandhagen, Munhoz, Rivera, Cody Stamann, Marlon Moraes, Rafael Sunsal, Takeo Mazagaki, Henan Barao. So he's for anybody that's anybody in his division. I think that goes a long way in him getting this fight, getting him here and actually taking advantage of Peter Yan's inexperience. I like Aljamain Sterling to win this fight by, I'm going to say, 4th round submission, rear naked choke. I think Jan's stand-up game is really good. I think if he has any shot at finishing Aljamain, he's going to have to catch him shooting. Like Derek Lewis caught Curtis Blaydes. That's going to be his best chance of winning as far as catching Aljamain Sterling. This is the people's main event. I think this probably might be fight of the night, but I'm going with Anu, Aljamain Sterling. 4th round submission, rear naked choke.
I'm glad that you guys brought up the competition level too, because that's something that I've been pretty vocal about, and I forgot to even include it in my breakdown of the fight. But that's something that I'm glad you guys said that, because that's been one of my biggest criticisms about Jan. He's looked really good, but I feel like he's been given guys that he was supposed to beat. I don't think he's really been lined up in his last couple fights up to the title with fights that we were really debating if he was going to win. You know, I think we all kind of knew that he could beat the last couple guys that he fought up to the title. You can't say the same thing about Sterling, his last couple fights. Although I would say Sterling's last 3 fights were all fights that we were kind of like, okay, we'll see what happens. You know, obviously you root for him, but you're really not sure. So,
yeah, I think the UFC put Sterling in there against guys they were hoping he'd lose to. Whereas they was putting Jan in there against guys they was hoping he'd beat. I mean, there's no other way to put it. You just look at who they for. I mean, Cody Stamen, Jimmy Rivera, Pedro Munoz, Corey Sandhagen. Good gracious. Some people forgot Cody Stamen was a bantamweight. He just moved up to 145.
True.
I think the route that I'm going to go with this. Yeah, go ahead.
No. I just want to say I'm glad we all, got our picks down. Very happy.
What's the route you want to go, Keys?
All I was going to say is that I wasn't going to pin that tweet to our channel or anything, because I don't want to put more bad, I don't want to put any bad juju. Yo, that was actually the word I was thinking of. That's kind of crazy. I don't want to put any more bad juju on Aljamain.
Actually, man, I really don't know how you guys feel about this, but I'm going to say how I feel about it. I don't like these cards where you got three title fights. I think that's kind of like overkill. And basically what you're saying is two of the champs don't. I mean, you said two of the champs aren't pay-per-view worthy. So that's why you're going to put another championship fight up there. But my thing is, y'all don't have the UFC. You don't have fans in the stands. So, what's your issue? People are already going to watch. So, are you really still that into pay-per-view buys right now? Whereas most people either stream the fight or they being that some places are open. I know, like Denver, all Hooters is open. So a lot of people still go check the fights out at the bar. I just don't understand why you would put three title fights on this card in March. That's just
it's kind of overkill. You know, I think they try to push the bar. They see other promotions doing, two title fight headliners, so they're over here trying to have that overkill and put three. And then at the same time, like you said, I don't think that they think that, some of these fights are fights that can sell on their own. But I think they're learning that that's not true because, I mean, if you go back, they put Usman and Masvidal with two other title fights last summer. And then, that one, you could see that one, did over a million, but that was they needed three title fights up there to do over a million. But then, Usman's stock definitely grew because the Usman Burns card did a lot of buys by itself. I think it did upwards of 500,000. And he did that. Him and Burns did that, I think, as the only title fight on the card, if I'm not mistaken. So, I think they're wrong about some of these guys. If you would just actually market them the way that you're supposed to, the way that you're supposed to and like the fighter that they are, I think you would be fine with one title fight per card.
Because if you really look at this card and break this card down, Evan, I'm going to come to you after I finish saying and making this point, see whether or not you agree. This card has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fights. Six fights on the early prelim. Four fights on the prelim. And then you got three title fights plus two additional fights on the main card. Now, I would have did a fight night. I would have had Dominique Cruz headline the fight night. I would have had Joseph Benavidez as the co-main event on the fight night. I would have had Kai Kara France on the fight night. I would have had Tim Elliott on the fight night. And I probably would have had Mario Bautista versus Trevor Jones on the fight night. Then everybody else, you could have put them on the main event card, and you could have had Song Yong Dong. He could have been the main event on the prelims, and you showcase these younger guys on the prelims. That way you get more bang for your buck and you get eyes on the young talent. Most people are not going to watch the early prelims. Most people don't watch the early prelims unless you're a diehard fan. I know I have them on. I watch them, but a lot of people don't watch the early prelims. So you wouldn't have had to stack this card as much if you would have done a fight night followed up by doing the pay-per-view.
I agree literally with everything you said, and I don't know if I've made, you know, my point clear on the whole, as you guys were talking about the triple title fights. I hate it. And also, the big thing, as you were just saying about how so many of these fights, which are great for us because now we get a mega pay-per-view and some great prelims, but, like, those great fights that are now stacking already a triple title fight would have been great on last week's card or the week before that. Like, I love stacking pay-per-views. I understand when you don't have Conor McGregor's anymore, just you don't have those stars right now, so you need to stack them. But it's still the most annoying thing ever when they stack three title fights. But, no, I agree. There's plenty of fights that could have been on fight nights, switched around with on the card already, and things would have been better. But that's the UFC. They know better, apparently.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, yeah, so, you know, UFC 259 this weekend, I'm looking forward to it. We'll probably be tweeting, or I'll probably be tweeting on Friday after the weigh-ins. And, yeah, that's it. You know, thank you to everybody for listening. I appreciate y'all. And it was definitely great chopping up the fights with y'all. And that's all I got. And either one of you want to close out the show, you're more than welcome.
I'll say some closing words real fast. Now, of course, thank you for everyone listening. We always have a fun time doing this. This is always great fun. Incredible card we have for this weekend, so be sure to check it out. I know a lot of people are iffy on buying pay-per-views, but this is the one that you buy. If you can't buy one for the rest of the year, forget all of those because this is the one. excuse me. But that's it for me. Like I said, can't wait for the fights. Thank you for watching, and yeah, see you guys on Saturday.
Yeah, like Keith said, I'll probably be tweeting from the Lee Keys and Evan Real Talk Twitter handle on Saturday during the fight. I'll definitely be live on that one. I think that timeline is actually pretty good during the fights, so I'll definitely be on that one. You know, this is a great, great card. A lot of good fights, a lot of up-and-comers on this card. Looking forward to it. I think this is the only thing we got going on because the All-Star game is Sunday. So I think this is the event where everybody going to have eyes on it. So ain't no football, ain't no baseball, ain't no basketball. Only thing you probably going to have is maybe one good college basketball game at the time of this pay-per-view and prelim. So, hey, everybody go out and check it out. Lee Keys, Evan, signing off for the night. As always, in closing, positive people with positive energy yield positive results. That being said, everybody have a good evening.